Documentarian Ken Burns made his first film as a student at Hampshire College in 1975. He's gone on to make dozens of critically acclaimed examinations of American history, ranging from jazz and baseball to the Vietnam War and country music. Now, Burns has attached his name to his alma mater's new fundraising effort, which he says is vital to its survival. Burns spoke with WAMC about the experimental college's attempt to raise $60 million over the next 5 years and his experience at Hampshire.
Hampshire's in the Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts, and we felt in the early 70s that we were pioneers. I came in the second class that arrived in the fall of 1971. There had already been a few sturdy pioneers before that, but there was a sense of experimentation and excitement and newness to it that somehow all the energy of the 1960s had built up this sort of demand that higher education not merely be what it's now clearly become, transactional, but it be also transformative. And we felt that we were the guinea pigs in a wonderful experiment. And look, I don't recognize the person who arrived at Hampshire in 1971 and the one who came out in the spring of 1975. It rearranged all my molecules. We wouldn't be talking if Hampshire College hadn't done what it did to me. It was in the intimate level of mentor-student relationships with great teachers like Jerome Liebling, but it was also the entire ideal, the model that was right and also experimenting. And I think that this current challenge actually is a perfect thing for Hampshire. It allows us to continue to remake ourselves, to revitalize that experimental mission, and to prepare Hampshire for a 21st century in which I think Hampshire graduates will be uniquely situated to solve the big picture problems that we have, whether it's climate change or guns or immigration or race and gender, technology, its positive and its negative effects. All of those things, Hampshire students have always been surprisingly adept at being able to straddle lots of different disciplines. And I think people will be beating a path to our door as we exit this crisis and begin to reinvent a new kind of Hampshire model.
So the new fundraising campaign is called Change in the Making. So I'm interested in why you chose to attach your name to this new effort. What is the college trying to achieve, and what's at stake here?
Well, I think what's at stake is clearly the future of the college, but I really have no doubt about that future. I think what we're saying is change in the making is that Hampshire has always had this experimenting posture, and in order to meet this particular challenge, which is not unique to Hampshire, it's essentially a demographic challenge and I think a societal challenge. We have, and the recent admission scandals proves it, taken one of the crown jewels of the American system, our higher education, the envy of the entire world, and turned it into a kind of transactional model. Yes, I can pay to get into this elite school, forgetting that what we wish to have happen to our children is the transformation of their selves, and Hampshire's all about that. And so I think what we're saying is that we will use this particular capital campaign to not only turn red ink into black, that seems so obvious, but to use this as an opportunity to transform ourselves and therefore continue to remain, as our president says, you know, the most important and essential college in American higher education. That's what we were back in the early 70s. That's what we've been throughout our history. And I think that as we emerge from this crisis, we'll be able to position ourselves in a way that will fulfill the kind of crying need for college to be transformative and not merely transactional.
So what did you take from your Hampshire experience into your life and career?
I don't know what I didn't take. The person who came in and the person who came out were two different people, and a lot of it had to do with the Hampshire model in the larger sense. A lot of it had to do with the personal experiences, the relationships I forged with teachers like Jerome Liebling and Elaine Mays. It was the friendships that I still have to this day. It was a way of relating to the world. You know, the career path, and I hate that word, that I was supposed to go on was to go into New York or L.A. and apprentice myself as a as an intern in a production company. Hampshire taught me to think outside the box. I started my own film company with two other Hampshire alums, Roger Sherman and Buddy Squires, Florentine Films, and we're still going strong. And that means that I've had the toughest boss you could ever have, which is yourself, for the last 44 years that I've been out of Hampshire. And it's permitted me to do the work that I'm known for. And that, in concert with moving towards public broadcasting and not kind of more business-oriented models, but sort of unique models, just the way Hampshire was, I've been able to do the work that I've been able to do over the last 40-plus years of public television broadcasts.
Hampshire has been re-releasing your Division III, your big thesis project at the college back from when you graduated in the 70s. When you look back at that work, you know, tell me a little bit about it. What is it like to look at it from these many decades later?
To prepare the uninitiated, Hampshire's model suggested that students pass through a series of divisions. It wasn't just year one, two, three, four, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. It was through division one allowed you to sample in all of the schools and to broadly educate yourself. The division two was concentrating in one particular area, and division three was continuing that independent study and concentration, but also finding a way to relate it in an interdisciplinary fashion to all the other schools and to pay back, to do some sort of community service. So I ended up making a film for Old Sturbridge Village on work in the early 19th century. And it was my baptism under fire. We had started a film production company, in quotes, run by the faculty that offered nonprofits essentially bare bones at cost film production. We were not paid a salary. We did not rent the equipment that Hampshire had. We just charged what the film cost, what its development costs and travel. And that was it. And so we were able to offer nonprofits the opportunity to get at one-tenth the price, if you will, a documentary, now admittedly by students. And so I cut my teeth. I learned how to tie a tie. I learned how to write a proposal. I learned how to manage a budget. I learned how to talk in public. I learned how to film. I learned the discipline of getting up every morning at 4 a.m. and driving an hour to Old Sturbridge Village before the sun rose and filming before the tourists came, and then sticking around and shooting archives, and then, you know, filming the sunset after the tourists had left and evoking that period. Little did I know that I was going to be staying in American history for my entire professional life. But that's the sort of thing that my Division III did. And then they ended up showing that film in their visitor center for years and years.
A lot of your work, even starting with that film back in 1975, focuses on the daily lived experiences of people in these historical periods. When did you sort of decide that those voices were going to be paramount to how you told stories about the past?
My mentor, Jerome Liebling, was first and foremost a humanist. He believed in the heroism of ordinary people. And so as I began to seek those kind of authentic interests that I had in American history, I brought that humanism that he had inculcated me with to these subjects. So American history was not just a sequence of presidential administrations punctuated by wars, but it was a bottom-up story of women, of minorities, of labor, of so-called ordinary people doing so-called ordinary things. And that bottom-up, combined with the top-down, gives you a much more dimensional portrait of the past, and it permits the audience, I hope, to identify with it, because too often if you hold people up in these kind of false, almost statues gathering pigeon, you know what, then you don't have a history, you just have kind of propaganda. But if you're willing to show that even the greatest of leaders had human dimensions and even human flaws, and even the worst of our villains had some positive aspects to them, then you've got a complicated complicated history that reminds people that it's not too different from their own, that they don't know anybody in their immediate world, a sphere that is perfect, and nor do they know anybody who's purely bad, and that within those two polarities is a room for really complicated and diverse American stories. I like to say that I've spent the last 45 years making films about the U.S., capital U, capital S, but I've also spent the last 45 years making films about the two-letter, lowercase, plural pronoun, us. And there's, you know, all of the work that I've done has sort of existed in that wonderful space between the intimacy of us and also we and our, and the majesty, the breadth, the complexity, the contradiction, and the controversy of the U.S.